Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Maine becomes the latest state to ban captive audience meetings, latest on the SAG after strike. And today on the show, the building of a chips plant in Arizona. What happens in an open shop? And the smart union on the new paid sick leave policy at Union Pacific. Welcome to the Monday, July 17th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to start things off with Lee Harris. Lee is a staff writer at the American Prospect. About 3 years ago, she co-founded New York Focus, an investigative news site on New York politics. And prior to that, she was an editor of an independent newspaper at the University of Chicago, and she is the author of several articles on the American Prospect. Great publication. Prospect.org is the website. And we've done several shows throughout the years with various writers from American Prospect. Today's story involves a chips plant, which is north of Phoenix. And this is a plant that pretty much came directly out of the passage of the CHIPS and Science Act, which commits $52 billion to the research and production of semiconductors. The whole idea here is to bring those jobs back from mainly China. Well, this is turning out to be one of the largest active construction sites in North America, a two-square-mile campus that will, when it's all done, churn out cutting-edge semiconductor chips, critical technologies that power nearly all electronics. You know, we love our electronics. We're talking everything from cars, children's toys, to medical devices, missiles, iPhones, you name it. Now, here's the story. The site is owned by the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC, one of the world's most powerful chip companies. They don't like unions. Now, mind you, when this announcement came down, President Biden said this plant, and even traveled there, would be built with union labor. Well, it's not turning out that way. So Lee went over to check to see what's going on. Most of the workers at the site are non-union. Many are migrants, out-of-state workers. In fact, she reports the parking lot is full of Texas and Louisiana license plates. Workers are saying injuries, safety violations are rampant. And the managers at TSMC have allegedly stepped in to modify the contractor's work without any warning. In fact, a worker with one of the staffing agencies hiring for the facility said she has repeatedly been paid less than her salary, and a number of colleagues have been denied paychecks. Now, they're trying to get a project labor agreement, but it's just not working. And we're going to talk about that. The head of the building trades set up a Zoom meeting with the managers, and he said it was very chilling. In fact, it was the iciest meeting he's ever been in. LIUNA Local 1184 does not have a single worker at the site, according to their business manager, Mike Day. Carpenters, cement layers, brick masons have also struggled. Now, one of the locals representing the plumbers, pipe fitters, HVAC techs, that would be Local 469, has been able to place some workers at the project. And the sheet metal workers also has seen some growth there. But for the most part, it's an open shop, and we're seeing a lot of violations with regard to safety. And apparently, from what I'm reading, too, One worker, or maybe two, may have died. We'll get all the latest information from Lee Harris, who is one of the brilliant reporters at the American Prospect magazine. Later in the show, we're going to talk about the new paid sick leave policy at Union Pacific. As you recall, last fall, this was a contentious issue, and we announced this on the show last week. Union Pacific has now ratified or made tentative agreements with all 13 of its labor unions on what they call quality of life issues. And the International Association of Sheet Metal Air, Rail, and Transportation Workers, SMART TD, that's a transportation division, well, they reached a tentative agreement to provide up to 8 paid sick leaves for around 5,900 railroad employees. Now, joining us later in the show, we have two individuals from SMART. One of them is Scott Chalette, a member since 1996. He's also been a general chairperson for 4 years, serves as chair of the Western General Chairpersons Association for SMART, also an alternate vice president for the union. Joining Scott will be Luke Eddington. Luke's been a Union Pacific general chairperson for 4 years, member of the union since 1998. So we'll talk about that new policy there. And it's so good that it's happening because the railroad industry has not been able to hire workers. And since the pandemic, they were down at one point, 45,000 workers. And I remember reporting on this show that they only brought back or hired new ones to the point of maybe 10% of that, 4,500, maybe 5,000. I don't know where they are right now. But one of the big problems of hiring workers is their paid sick leave policy or lack thereof. So finally, they're moving in the right direction on that. All right, now a brief look into the world of labor. This segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. The state of Maine has become the latest state to ban captive audience meetings. How about that? Governor Janet Mills signed into law an act to protect employee freedom of speech, which prohibits employers from disciplining or terminating workers who refuse to attend captive audience meetings. And we know how prevalent they are in America. So if an employer violates that right, a worker may file a civil suit in state court within 90 days of the alleged violation, and a court may grant injunctive relief, reinstatement, and back pay. Now, Maine joins Connecticut and Oregon as states that have recently passed captive audience meeting bans, and a similar bill is unfolding in New York and awaiting the signature of the governor. Jennifer Abruzzo is the NLRB's general counsel. She issued a memo in April of last year stating her view that captive audience meetings violate the National Labor Relations Act, and a lawsuit over that memo is currently being litigated in a federal court in Michigan. You know this is not going to be easy. You know that. Well, actors hit the picket lines Friday morning in their first strike against film and TV production since 1980, and the nation's largest strike since 1997. Now, there are 160,000 members of SAG-AFTRA, Screen Actors Guild, American Federation of TV Radio Artists, the union representing everyone from A-list stars to struggling actors working other jobs while awaiting their first break in the industry. The union argues that the rapid changes in the industry in recent years with the rise of streaming services have made it pretty much impossible for many, if not most of the members, to earn a decent living. Now, this group is the largest number of union members to be on strike since 180,000 Teamsters walked out on UPS going back to 1997. But it might not be the largest for long. That's because the Teamsters, who have 340,000 members at UPS, are threatening to strike the parcel delivery giant on August 1 if they don't reach a new contract. And right now, the talks are stalled. So add that up. You're talking over, what, 500,000 people could be on strike in a couple of weeks? Now, the actors also join more than 11,000 members of the Writers Guild of America, who've been on strike against the same studios and streaming services since May 2nd. That union is striking over many of the same issues as SAG-AFTRA. The writers' strike had already halted production on most films and TV shows, and the fear is that with the actors joining them, there could be a very long work stoppage stretching into the fall, perhaps to the end of the year. Now, the traditional start of the fall television season and the release of some big-budget movies planned for next year now at risk. Also, that strike, the strike that's going on now, could cost billions of dollars, not just in lost wages and profits, but in the hit to businesses that provide support to the industry, mainly in Southern California. Now, the actors are picketing in Los Angeles and New York, and it's the first time both unions have been on strike at the same time since 1960, so long ago that Ronald Reagan was then the president of the Screen Actors Guild. How about that? Now, management claims it made what it termed a historic offer with significant pay increases for some job classifications. Largest pay increase, they say, in pay minimums in 35 years and new protections that address union concerns about the use of artificial intelligence in movies and TV shows. The alliance said in a statement, a strike is certainly not the outcome we hope for, as studios cannot operate without performers that bring our TV shows and films to life. Well, yeah, I guess that's a pretty obvious point there. They went on to say the union has regrettably chosen a path that will lead to financial hardship for countless thousands of people who depend on the industry. Now, the union dismissed the idea that management's proposal on artificial intelligence offered any protections. And listen to this. Duncan Crabtree Ireland is the union's chief negotiator. And he said, management is proposing that our background performers should be able to be scanned, get paid for one day's pay, and their company should own that scan, their image, their likeness, and be able to use it for the rest of eternity on any project they want with no consent and no compensation. So if you think it's a groundbreaking proposal, I suggest you think again. Very good point. That's a good example of how artificial intelligence can screw the worker. Really, really good example. Now, at the press conference on Friday, Fran Drescher, you may remember her from The Nanny. She is the president of SAG-AFTRA. She said the union is fighting not just for a living wage for members, but also against corporate greed and the protection for workers across the country not to have their jobs replaced by AI. She said, and I quote, "This is a moment of history, a moment of truth. If we don't stand tall right now, we're all going to be in trouble." That's what solidarity is all about. I am a member of SAG-AFTRA. I've said this on the show. I'm not part of this because I'm under the broadcast contract, but I was privy to actually how wide this strike is in Hollywood. I'm just going to run down some of the work that's affected here. Acting, of course, singing, dancing, performing stunts, puppeteering, TV trailers, anybody that works on those, voice acting, singing, narration, stunt coordinating and related services, stand-in work, photo and or body doubles. That's real big in the industry. Fittings, wardrobe tests, makeup tests, rehearsals, camera tests, scanning, interviews and auditions, promotion, publicity service for work under the TV theatrical contract, such as tours, personal appearances, interviews, conventions, fan expos, festivals, award shows, junkets, social media, studio showcases. That just gives you an idea of how broad this strike is in Hollywood. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to find out what the heck is going on at a chips plant in Arizona. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You could find more at oh.aft.org. In fact, Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation, will be joining us on the show tomorrow. Right now, let's go to line number one. Joining us from New York is Lee Harris. Lee is a staff writer at a great publication, which we have quoted many times on the show, the American Prospect, prospect.org. And she had the assignment to go out to Arizona back in May to check out what's going on at a chips plant, a semiconductor chips plant. Now, this is all the follow-up of the Chips and Science Act and the Inflation Reduction Act, good policies that came out of the Biden administration. And I know President Biden is trying to get as many jobs as possible for union brothers and sisters. Sometimes it just doesn't pan out that way. This site is owned by the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC, and it's one of the largest corporations in the world. And I guess in a nutshell, they're not all that union friendly. Lee Harris, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us. So did I get that correct? You wanted to see how these policies are panning out, so you traveled. This was just outside of Phoenix. Talk to me about your journey there. Go ahead.
Thanks for having me on. And yeah, you got it spot on. This is a plant that's crucial to Biden's kind of national security strategy for reshoring advanced chip making in the United States. Of course, we've fallen behind on making the most advanced semiconductors that go in iPhones and missiles and cars and other electronics. And so a big part of the Chips and Science Act, which was passed in August last year, contains $52 billion for subsidies to U.S.-based semiconductor foundries to get them up to speed and indeed to bring TSMC, the company you mentioned, to manufacture in the United States. So it's really ambitious on that front. Now, President Biden visited this particular plant at an opening ceremony last year and said that it was being, quote, built union. But that's pretty misleading. It's a plant with some 12,000 workers on the job site. I mean, it's really enormous. And the majority of those workers are non-union. The company has refused to sign a project labor agreement. And according to the workers that I interviewed, has been pretty reluctant to work with unions. So there are a couple of union contractors on site. However, the workers I interviewed described a range of really terrible injuries. And I should say it's hard to confirm those injuries because it's a job site that employs hundreds of subcontractors. But invariably, I spoke to a number of workers who said it's been a really tough site to work on.
And it's not for a lack of trying. I was reading in your article, the head of the Arizona Building and Construction Trades Council, Aaron Butler, was trying to meet with the people at TSMC about getting more union work. I guess that didn't go very well, did it?
No, Aaron and others. I mean, Mike Day, who is the LIUNA, the laborers' local president for or director for Southern California and Arizona, has been continuously trying to get laborers out on the site just because it's this enormous project with a huge number of job opportunities and with no success. And so just to give you a couple examples of the kind of conditions people are facing out there, according to Aaron Butler, the president of the Arizona Building Trades Council, at least two construction workers have died on the site. One non-union worker who was, I was told, was using a grinder and sliced into his femoral artery. Another person who died of an overdose. And then workers also described loads of steel being dropped from cranes, several fall injuries, including a man who I was told fell 30 feet through badly marked flooring. One person told me that man broke his ribs and damaged his spleen. And so workers have really struggled with what they describe as just a job site that cuts a lot of corners. The other dynamic that stood out to me was as these union firms work alongside non-union contractors, a number of them said that non-union contractors, because they have less well-trained workforces, have made some pretty basic mistakes that have led to setbacks in the building of the plant. So, for instance, one directed me to the example of a non-union contractor that was installing steel pipe, a big piece of 72-inch pipe, and ran condenser water through it as a test. And then when this non-union crew went to drain the pipe full of water, they forgot to add a vent, creating a vacuum. So basically, the entire thing collapsed. It was like sucking the air out of a plastic bottle. And to union workers, you know, any first-year union apprentice would know not to make that kind of obvious mistake. But, you know, over 100 feet of pipe, I was told, ended up collapsing, leading to some pretty significant delays. And the company has complained that it's been really tough to build things at this site, that they've had a huge number of delays. They're struggling to find skilled workers, which leads me into the most recent dynamic at the site, which is when I went, there were already a significant number of out-of-state and out-of-country workers, of Taiwanese workers who had come in to work on the site. But now the company has been kind of making the rounds in the media talking about how hard it is to work with American workers and is aiming to bring in 500 or more Taiwanese workers to complete the building of the site. And understandably, that has really frustrated unions who have struggled to get a project labor agreement to actually get work on the site. The fact that rather than hiring locally, this company would go abroad.
Oh, my. So that's where they are right now. What, as far as the injuries and the deaths that you mentioned, how are they addressing that? I mean, that's pretty significant there. And you would think that maybe state officials in Arizona would clamp down on that. Is any of that happening?
It's been really tough to get much comment from anyone, partly, I think, because this is such a politically sensitive site. There's real ambition for this to go well and for the company to have a positive experience. And I think that takes me into another important dynamic in thinking about this site, which is the Department of Commerce is currently in the process of choosing where to spend CHIPS money. So that $52 billion I mentioned, that hasn't been spent yet. The Commerce Department put out a guidance document with some criteria on how they'll be selecting recipients. And the criteria are pretty good. They're quite union friendly. There are no firm requirements, but Commerce is saying, hey, show us your workforce plan and how you're going to work with local labor. Show us even whether you have a childcare plan in place and how you're going to ensure access to affordable childcare. The issue is that the Commerce Department is choosing how to allocate this money, and there's only a handful of firms that can do the really leading edge chip production, and TSMC is kind of first among them. Apple stopped buying its advanced semiconductors from Intel a couple years ago. TSMC is now the world's leading contract chip maker. It partners with all the big tech companies to make their bespoke chips. Mm-hmm. And so I think TSMC is a little bit maybe playing a game of chicken, saying, hey, Commerce Department, we'd like to see some of those subsidies, and ultimately you need us more than we need you.
Now, this company, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC, you mentioned how big they are. I mean, their way of doing things, like what they're doing in Arizona, is that pretty typical? I mean, I'm wondering if your research found that out. They've got to have a number of plants around the world, and obviously they're big in Taiwan. But when it comes to labor and their safety record and all that, is this a surprise? Is that that's a question I have for you.
Certainly, one thing that they've emphasized is that whether it's with their construction workers or with their engineers in Taiwan, they have a work culture that really emphasizes respect for authority, following commands, carrying out a project, and it de-emphasizes what they often complain about in American engineers, which is creativity, doing projects doing projects your own way, questioning your superiors about whether something is really the best way to be doing something. On the other hand, I think you can make too much of those differences. I mean, the founder of TSMC spent over 20 years of his career at Texas Instruments, and I think they're pretty close affinities between the way these companies are run. I think the way to think about it is probably not so much in terms of like inevitable cultural differences, but look, what is the U.S. going to ask of this company when it comes here and follows our laws? TSMC is also probably going to be building one of these plants in Germany, where I think it'll be much harder to get around working with the unions because unions are at the table bargaining in a national system in that country. There's less of the dynamic we have in the U.S. where if you want to skirt working with unions, you can go to a right-to-work state and have much more leverage.
Exactly. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one in Germany. They have a workers' council over there, so the workers are at the table on that. Lee Harris joining us on our live line today. She is a staff reporter at the American Prospect. Do check these articles out on the Prospect website. That's prospect.org. One of the articles is titled "Chipmakers Scramble to Build Marred by Mistakes and Injuries," and also at least two deaths. We'll continue with Lee. Later in the show, we're going to check with two gentlemen from the Smart Union. That's a sheet metal, air, rail, and transit division. And they're going to talk about the new paid sick leave policy at Union Pacific. All part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes La Una to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at USW.org.
A great union requires a reliable election system. Survey and Ballot Systems is a trusted election partner with more than 30 years of expertise in managing union elections. By partnering with SBS, your union can ensure it gets an auditable process and a high level of customer service. SBS is here to help you conduct your union vote securely, transparently, and with trust building always in mind. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up. Receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. All right, let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Lee Harris, staff writer for the American Prospect magazine. Prospect.org is a website. A couple of months ago, Lee visited a chips plant in Arizona, just outside Phoenix, and this is a plant owned by the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, or TSMC, one of the world's most powerful brands, bigger than Intel right now. That's hard to believe. You were mentioning in the first segment here that the Chips and Science Act commits $52 billion to the research and production of semiconductors. Do you have an idea what TSMC is going to get out of that? Do we know that number right now?
We don't yet know the number, and the Department of Commerce actually has a huge amount of discretion. It's really up to them how to dole out the funds. But the Wall Street Journal reported that TSMC is planning on asking for $6 to $7 billion in grants, and of that pot. And then they also are expecting to get tax credits from the CHIPS Act of $7 to $8 billion. So that could bring the total they receive to as high as $15 billion.
And Lee, you pointed out, too, that the government, specifically the Commerce Department, can be real specific on this. If they're going to give that kind of money, there are certain conditions that have to be written into that. But then again, this company may ignore them, and they have a pretty good track record of doing that. Can you speak to that?
That's sort of right. I mean, it's not so much that they would ignore them. I think TSMC is going to give Commerce a plan of what they're expecting to do. Commerce has the discretion to ignore them and not give them funding out of the CHIPS Act, but that would be highly unlikely given that TSMC is a crucial chip maker. And so simply by virtue of the technology that they produce, which the U.S. wants to produce more of, it seems likely that TSMC is going to get a pretty big cash infusion. What's a little outrageous, and I spoke to a former tech executive who's now researching TSMC for the American Economic Liberties Project. He kind of pointed out that he thinks TSMC is doing what he called press positioning right now,
mm-hmm.
meaning they're kind of making the rounds in the media complaining that it's so hard and so expensive to build things in America that, in fact, Commerce should give them more money to compensate for the hard time they're having building with American workers. And it's pretty outrageous that they seem to be making that request even as they ask for special work permits for Taiwanese workers to come in and undercut jobs that local workers could have.
Yeah, that's exactly what this company is trying to do. She mentioned in the first segment here that we're talking about 500 workers coming in from Taiwan. Let me ask you, what are the unions saying about this? I know they're frustrated. They try to get a PLA, and it's not going anywhere. Is this something that's ramping up their apprenticeship program? I mean, some of the unions are well, they're at full speed ahead. And I want to talk about what's going on in Central Ohio here, because it's a tale of two different job sites. But I know a lot of unions are trying desperately to get as many people involved in the trades. Are they doing that in Arizona? I know it's much different than a state like Ohio or New York or Pennsylvania, but I'm just wondering what the status is with the unions there.
You know, without a PLA, it's pretty darn tough. I mean, as you mentioned, Ohio not only has a chips plant, but it has a historically big one. The Ohio plant has the biggest project labor agreement in IBEW history by a factor of two. Meanwhile, in the South, a lot of these developments funded by the IRA and CHIPS may have great output, but they haven't seen the same kinds of union provisions. So, yeah, the union representatives in Arizona are very frustrated because they want to train up, you know, a new generation of workers to staff this plant. But it's unclear that they'll have the jobs once they do so.
Mm-hmm. Now, this plan to bring in people from Taiwan, is that currently in the works? Because I know that's going to cause an uproar if that happens.
They're working on getting work permits. So my understanding is it's not underway yet, but it could be as soon as this summer that they bring them in.
Lee, I know the American Prospect covers issues like this. I'm wondering, did you get a gauge of how the media is reporting this, you know, the mainstream media?
I think there's been some increasing attention to it and really increasing questions for politicians in Arizona. Mark Kelly was just asked about it on a TV show the other day and kind of punted. So I think there will be more scrutiny, especially as this becomes an even more high-profile project that is receiving so much federal funding around why weren't there more labor provisions built in for Arizona's. But for now, it's something that I think media is just starting to notice.
Do you think because there's federal money at stake, I mean, if they want to play hardball, I guess our federal government can play hardball on this whole thing. You mentioned millions upon millions of dollars coming from the CHIPS and Science Act. What if they say, hey, you know what? You got to get your act together here. You got to start thinking about a project labor agreement. We don't like people dying on the job. We don't like the injuries that are happening there. You think that might happen?
Well, the exciting thing is I think those talks may be underway right now with Commerce. Certainly, I think Commerce is trying to press that line of argument, and the question is partly whether TSMC takes them seriously or calls them on their bluff and says, you know, if it is a bluff and says, no, we think you'll award us the funding anyway.
Uh-huh. When you went to this plant in May, how were you treated as an outsider?
I was interviewing workers in the parking lot and got kicked out ultimately by a security person who said I couldn't be on the site, and in fact, that I couldn't take pictures of the site either.
Wow. Well, my hat's off to you. I that takes a lot of guts to do what you did over there. Are you going to stay on this story here? What's the game plan
for
the future?
I'd like to, certainly. The union contractors on the site are having a number of issues as we speak, so I'm trying to follow what's happening as the company plans to bring in more workers from overseas. The company says that won't affect existing employment on the site, although that seems a little dubious. So I'm trying to figure out what kind of impact it's having on people on the ground.
Well, I appreciate your reporting, and you piqued my interest here because LIUNA, Labor's International Union of North America, is our presenting sponsor here on America's Workforce. And I see in your article, Local 1184 does not have a single worker at the site. That is atrocious. So we're going to try to get Mike Dia on the show. He's the business manager there.
He's terrific, and he has a lot to say about it.
Oh, I'm sure he does. Also, Aaron Butler, president of the Arizona Building and Construction Trades Council. We'll stay on this story. So thank you for what you did. Keep doing what you're doing. We need more reporters like Lee Harris, okay?
Thanks very much. Have a great day.
Okay, do check that article, prospect.org, prospect.org. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, big changes at Union Pacific, paid sick leave. We'll talk about it next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. All right, let's go to line number two right now. We have two gentlemen joining us, and they're both from the Smart Transportation Division. SMART is an acronym for Sheet, Metal, Air, Rail, and Transportation. And we're here to talk about the new policy at Union Pacific. We got paid sick leave, as you remember. This was a contentious issue last fall. They were even talking about going on strike at the railroad. 12 of them, 12 unions involved in the rail industry. SMART is one of them. Let's start with Scott Shalette. So, Scott, you're based in Tyler, Texas. Tell me a little bit about yourself before we get into the Union Pacific. Go ahead.
Sure. I'm a general chairman for Smart Transportation, as you mentioned. Also elected as an AVP, international officer. And my office represents probably somewhere around 1,400 members throughout the state of Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and we go into different other states as well.
Gotcha. Big territory there. Not what you call union friendly in Texas, is it?
Not at all. Not at all.
Not at all.
In fact, the county where my office is about 85% red.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not surprised about that. All right, let's go to Kansas now. And joining us is brother Luke Eddington, who's been a Union Pacific general chairperson for 4 years. Luke, fill me in. Give me a little background on yourself.
Okay, yeah, so I hired on in 98. I've been a union officer for going on 13 years. We're out of Topeka, Kansas, and my office represents members from Chicago to Seattle on the north half of UP. So we see a lot of states. We have five short lines. We just organized one out in Oregon, but five short line railroads as well. We have about 3,800 members on average, depending on the fluctuations. Yeah, I see a little bit of everything with states and red and blue.
So. Well, if you're going from Illinois to Washington State, yeah, there's everything in between there. That's interesting. Big territory there. All right, Scott, let's start with you. Talk to me about working with Union Pacific. And I'll tell you, we We, like I said, we dedicated a lot of time on this show, especially with the Teamsters, the Brotherhood of Locomotive Trainmen, and all that. Frick, we're going to stay on this too because we're finally seeing some good results here. But Union Pacific, did they cave right away on this issue? Because I know they're having a hard time hiring workers. Talk to me about that part.
No, they definitely did not cave right away. At all. And it's kind of inspiring to see how this tentative agreement converged into what it is today. It kind of all started, as you mentioned, back during national negotiations. Our members, you know, voiced their concern with paid sick time off and really a quality of life, which our international president, Ferguson, he took that message not only to each one of the carriers, but he took it to our national legislative office. And then from there, our national legislative office went to Congress and said, our people don't have any time off when they get sick. And really and truly, I think, you know, by Congress, in particular, Senator Bernie Sanders putting in some pressure on these carriers to sit down at the negotiating table with the unions. And of course, this has been a few months in progress, but we was finally able to get them to where we are today.
And how many days are we talking about right now, paid sick leave?
Yeah, the ability to take up to 9 paid sick days. The carrier gives you 5 paid sick days, right? Every employee. Mm-hmm. And then you have the option to use 3 single vacation days, roll them into paid sick days, and then you have an additional day that we was able to get through that national contract. So the good thing about these 9 is they can not only be used any time, any day of the week, but they can never be denied, and you can roll them over into a bank if you don't use them.
So when the year comes up, they would transfer to the next year, so the 9 could turn into 18 if you don't use them?
Well, they go into a bank. So you have a couple options when they go into the bank. You could either, later on the following year, you can cash them out, which I think was huge for us. Or you can just continue to bank them up, and that be in case if you ever need them down the road. So you would have to use up your current year's paid sick time before you could touch that bank.
I gotcha. Now, Luke, let's hear from you. You've been a Union Pacific general chairperson for a number of years. This had to be an interesting journey for you. Can you speak to it as far as that? Like, I mean, Scott was pretty clear that they didn't cave on this one. This wasn't easy. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, Scott hit the nail on the head. Nothing is ever easy with them. There always needs to be outside pressure. And I think you see that with the NS right now, the turmoil that they're in with East Palestine. So they've made some good progress as far as improving quality of life, addressing safety, our general chairman on that side. Now, the outside pressures that helped us, as Scott mentioned, the legislative department was huge. They got out in front of the politicians. What the politicians failed to understand prior to this was our schedule. Like, oh, they get vacation. The railroad lobbyists are very powerful. They have paid time off they can use for these things. But that was inaccurate. That's totally at the behest of the carrier whether they grant that time off. So we needed those outside influences, which we got. The NS, the CSXT, they were able to get some paid sick leave agreements, which in turn put more pressure on Union Pacific to do something. They want to get the good PR, so to speak. That's typically a big motivating factor for them, is something they can go out and say, look what we've done for our employees. I mean, they've only been voted the worst employer for 3 or 4 years running, so they're looking desperately for PR, and we capitalize on that.
Yeah. You mentioned NS. I know you're referring to Norfolk Southern. We know that all too well in the state of Ohio with mm-hmm. what happened at East Palestine, Ohio. So there's, what was it, about 4 or 5 big railroads right now, and they're pretty much run by Wall Street tycoons. So they seem to be getting the message. To the smart is involved in those other rail companies, right?
Correct. Yes.
And how are we faring with that? You mentioned obviously we're, you know, Union Pacific wanted some good PR on that. Are the other ones are the other ones going to follow here in your estimation?
You hope so. You know, BN is another one, but BN is a little bit different because it's privately owned. So whether or not they come along with this, I don't know. But we're enjoying it for our members right now, and really this agreement's what happens when you see the organization work as a whole. Your legislative, your general committees, everyone working together, pulling at the same time, so to speak. You get good results for the members.
Right. Now, Luke and Scott, did you, I know you're in different states and all that, but did you work together on this, and were there meetings done together? Was this done virtually? I mean, how were you able to accomplish this?
A little bit of both, actually. So, you know, of course, I'll brag on my buddy Luke there for a second. Luke is the one that he has a knack for writing things up of this nature. So Luke had wrote this original document up and said, "Hey guys, look what I'm working on." And, you know, so we all came together, started sharing it back and forth via email, kind of picked up on that idea and hitchhiked, if you will, off of Luke's thoughts and original document. Then we felt that we had enough that not only working on this, on some other big issues together, that we actually all took a trip and met in Cleveland, Ohio at our international office. And we worked on this together and said, look, this is what we think we could get when we stick together and make one system agreement, which is a big win for Union Pacific. And you see that how big of a win for our members when we do something like this as well.
Let me ask you this. What I'm reading here, it's tentative. How close are we? When is the vote going to take place on this?
The vote is going on right now. We will know by the end of this month whether or not it ratifies.
Okay. What do you feel? What's the temperature of the room right now?
It's being received very well on the property from our membership.
Good. You mentioned perhaps other issues here. What's next on the table here? Either one of you could pick up on this one.
We still have open articles from, it's a public law for us because our national agreement didn't ratify as imposed. So we still have three articles on there that we have to negotiate with Union Pacific. So in our meetings in Cleveland, we went through those and discussed them and really drafted up some good ideas and language. And we have more meetings set with Union Pacific that they will take time. It's something that we're not going to rush. We want to make sure we do it right the first time. So we're very methodical in what we do and make sure that our members get the best result possible. It's something that we don't want to hurry. Because it's going to have a big impact on their lives. So.
Oh, absolutely. One more question here. And either one of you could pick up on this. How are we doing getting some new blood, getting some of the old workers back, maybe new workers? And I know the industry took a hit during the pandemic. I mean, there were like 45,000 jobs that disappeared because a lot of stuff just wasn't running anymore. And just a fraction of the workers were hired back. Where do we stand on employment in the rail industry right now? Because I know, obviously, if you have good policies, you're going to get workers, and paid sick leave is one of them. So what's the answer to that?
Well, where we stand today is that the railroads are hiring. It every time you turn around, they're hiring another class. They're hiring another class, and sometimes they're hiring, you know, multiple classes per month, which generally a class is 20 to 25 people. Our fear as an organization and as what we're telling the railroad is that they're hiring too much. Take, for instance, in my territory down here in Texas, they literally told me that they were hiring so they could send our people up to Luke's territory in pockets where they couldn't hire in some of his places. So we know that we see the writing on the wall that, you know, we're heading back down the furlough path. In fact, the railroad just told us last week at a meeting with them that they fear that as well in certain areas. So it's kind of scary, but yet they're continuing to hire today.
All right, and we'll see what happens here with this tentative contract agreement on paid sick leave. Okay, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. That's J. Scott Shillette and Luke Eddington on behalf of the Smart Transportation Division, Smart Standing for Sheet Metal, Air, Rail, and Transit. Well, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, I'm going to check in with the Ohio Federation of Teachers and the right-wing assault on public education. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.